Today's podcast is titled Neurotrophic Keratitis Management, How Early Intervention Can Make a Difference. Joining me in conversation is Walter Whitley, an optometrist with Virginia Eye Consultants, who will talk about identifying and treating NK early. In today's podcast, we're going to zoom in on the cornea, and if we zoom in far enough, we find 7,000 nerve receptors per square millimeter. These nerve fibers help keep the cornea healthy by triggering blinking, stimulating tears, and producing trophic factors. When damage to the trigeminal nerve occurs, it can result in neurotrophic keratitis, or NK, a rare disease that affects 5 or fewer individuals per 10,000. If it progresses to a severe state, NK can cause stromal melting and corneal perforation. First off, Dr. Whitley, what symptoms and signs in a patient would make you start considering NK as a diagnosis?
Common symptoms and signs that would make me think that the patient has early NK. Symptom-wise, it's going to be patients with blurred vision, where we may see them and they're complaining that their vision just isn't right, that their glasses doesn't work. That's going to be the most common symptom that I would see in a patient with early NK. Because when we're thinking about NK, we know that there is decreased innervation or decreased nerve sensitivity. And so these patients aren't necessarily going to be complaining of burning, of redness, and all the irritation that we would see in a traditional dry eye patient. And so the signs that we would see is going to be that diffuse staining that doesn't go away. Anytime we see this, it's important for us to identify and follow those patients once again, because we want to make sure that this does not progress. We know that this can lead to potential infections, because we know the epithelium is compromised. And we know that there isn't the innervation going back to the brain to help improve that corneal surface. And so those are the common signs and symptoms. The symptoms can be more visual in my experience with the blurred vision or maybe fluctuating vision. And the signs are going to be the recalcitrant dry eye or SPK patient.
Infections, systemic diseases, and trauma, including ocular surgery, can cause the disruption in corneal innervation that results in NK. Dr. Whitley, how can you efficiently take a patient history to uncover potential causes of NK in a patient?
Ways to take an efficient history for patients with early NK is right when we're about to see that patient. Of course, we're going into the room, we're going to greet them, we're going to, you're going to just have that early conversation, but just letting our patient know, hey, give me one moment, I want to concentrate on you. Let me take a look at your medical history. When we're looking through that history, if we see a history of herpetic conditions, whether it's simplex, whether it's zoster, maybe it's a patient that has diabetic retina or diabetes or even diabetic retinopathy, those are patients that I'm already going to start considering. Do they have dry eye? Is this a potential NK patient? If they've had any type of surgeries, we know that that can lead to patients that do have NK, as well as patients that are on preservative drops. And so these are just some of the early things that when I see that, I'm thinking it's ocular surface, or make sure we're asking and looking at the ocular surface, but then always keeping those two things in mind, dry eye as well as NK, because those are some of those risk factors.
Assessing the patient's corneal sensitivity is key in diagnosing NK. What do clinicians need to keep in mind when performing corneal sensitivity testing?
How I perform and grade, interpret corneal sensitivity testing. First, if that patient's coming in for ocular surface evaluation, and that's specifically what they're there for, we have the protocols within our practice that it's no touch, because we do not want any drops on that. If we don't have that that standing order in place, then we may have the technician that puts in proparacaine or fluoresce that we know is going to disrupt the ocular surface. But there's no way I'll be able to test for corneal sensitivity. And so if that's in that case, what I'll do is I'll do whatever I can for that visit. But when I bring that patient back at the next visit, whether it's a couple of weeks or longer, then I will specifically say no touch corneal sensitivity testing. So how do I perform it? For me, I'll take either a cotton wisp or I will take dental floss. And for me, essentially, we will take a look at the various quadrants, so superior, inferior, nasal, temporal, as well as central, to determine areas that have less sensitivity or decreased innervation. You know, for the clinic I'm at, we are a cornea practice. We see a lot of patients with herpetic eye disease. And so in some areas, we're going to get less sensitivity than in other areas of that of the cornea. But the main thing is you don't have to do all five. The main thing is have this in your differential, but also test for it. And so you can take the cotton wisp. You're going to make a fine point at the end of the cotton tip applicator, and you just want to touch that ocular surface. If the patient has a normal response and blinks or kicks you, then you know they have normal corneal sensitivity. If you're touching that ocular surface and you know they can, you can sense that they feel it, but they say they don't feel it as much, then we know it's going to be reduced. Or we are going to have that patient where we are going to touch that surface and they're not going to feel a darn thing. And so those are patients that have absent. So normal, reduced, or absent, but then you can also have the hyperacute response where sometimes we may see that in not our NK patient, but our neuropathic corneal patient who will have a hypersensitive response. Whenever I'm doing this, I'm always testing the normal eye first. And so I will test the unaffected eye and see what's normal. And then that gives the patient a better reference for the affected eye or the presumed affected eye. Is it normal, reduced, or absent? And so that's how we do it within, and how I do it within my clinic. When the patient comes back, with whatever treatment I put that patient on, it's not a test that I'm going to do consistently every single time, but it is something that helps me with my diagnosis. Because once it's reduced or absent, the nerves are already involved. And so that's where the innervation and the treatments need to target.
What might cause clinicians to misdiagnose NK or have a delay in diagnosing it?
Factors that can lead to a delayed diagnosis or misdiagnosis of a patient with NK are going to be patients that, you know, we've been treating. The most common one that comes to mind is treating for dry eye, where we add the various drops, we add the various therapies, and we keep seeing the patient back over and over. And maybe we think that maybe they're not doing their drops or just maybe they have a more severe condition. But that's why it's important for us to take a step back, because the delayed diagnosis, we know that these medications do work. We do know that the dry eye therapy is very effective, but if the condition is not getting any better, that's why we treat and follow. That's why we bring patients back. If that patient has that 3+, 4+ staining on that surface, we need to think, hey, well, let's take a look to see what those corneal nerves feel are how they're functioning. What is that sensation? You know, maybe the patient had a history of herpetic keratitis. Maybe the patient's been on prostaglandins that have preservatives that have been eating up at the corneal surface. Yes, maybe have tried to mask it with some dry eye therapy, but that patient still does have the signs. And so they're not really complaining about the symptoms. They have those signs, but we're still trying to use the traditional treatments without taking a step back, seeing where does the corneal nerves play and what role does it play, and does this need to be addressed?
How does NK impact patients if it progresses to stage 2 or 3?
The impact of advanced NK is detrimental on our patient. Because when we think about advanced NK, these are those patients which are stage 3, that have a corneal ulcer, the patients that have stromal lysis or stromal melting. These are the patients that may have a perforation. And in those cases, we may have to address it with some corneal glue initially, and the patient may or will eventually need a corneal transplant to address that cornea. But we don't want that. We don't even want stage 2. We know stage 2 is an epithelial defect. We know that the stroma will have some swelling with some folds in it. We do know that there may be an anterior chamber inflammatory reaction. But for these cases, these are defects that are oval in nature. The stroma is starting to become involved. And so this can progress if not treated and have the targeted therapy that can improve those corneal nerves. But why do we want to wait to there? If we can identify these patients earlier the stage one, these are the patients that have the decreased tear film breakup time. These are the patients that have increased mucus viscosity, but these are also those patients that have the punctate corneal epithelial defects or the recalcitrant SPK, where we see 3 to 4+ diffuse punctate keratitis. Those are patients, we see that. It's so important that we test those nerves and the nerve sensitivity, because if we can intervene then, we can prevent that from getting to the more advanced cases.
So you've mentioned treatment for NK, and I'd like to ask about management of patients with early NK. What options are available, and how do you use them in your practice?
So what are some of the early treatment options for NK? And what we're going to talk specifically for stage one. This is that patient that we discussed has the punctate keratitis, whether it's 3+, whether it's 4+. We tested the sensitivity and we know that there is reduced or absent sensitivity. So the traditional options are going to be one, preservative-free artificial tears. Punctal occlusion is another option that can be utilized. A hydrogel contact lens, recombinant human growth factor, as well as serum plasma or platelet-rich plasma are options that can be utilized. For me, I will start somewhere in between there. And so that's where we're going to start our treatment. We know that there are more advanced therapies when we go to stage two and stage three. But for me, essentially what I do is the most common patient that I'm going to see in the early stages are going to be those patients that we previously identified or traditionally been diagnosed as a dry eye patient. And so when I see those signs, I already did the no-touch testing and no-touch evaluation and tested the nerves. And so we know we have decreased innervation. And so what are the ways that we can address that? And that's going to be with biologics. And the currently available biologics, we have the autologous serum. We do have the amniotic membranes that are available, both the cryopreserve as well as the dry membranes, but also the human nerve growth factors in topical Centrum. And so these, I do have experience with all of them. Most commonly for me, I do a combination of both the amniotic membrane as well as the Centrum, which is the human nerve growth factor. The reason why is we already know we have decreased innervation. We know that the amniotic membrane is something that can help our patients. And looking at studies, I know Tom John did a study comparing patients that are on maximum medical therapy for dry eye disease versus patients that were given a cryopreserved amniotic membrane for up to a week. And I'm not going to go into details of that study, except for when they looked at the corneal nerve sensitivity as well as density, that did improve. And so, looking at studies like that, that's where I say, hey, this is where I'm going to use the amniotic membrane, because this is something I can do now to help address the condition. I'm also ordering the Centrum for our patients. And so this is an application process where it's going to take a couple of weeks for the patient to get it. And so that's why I don't necessarily delay in doing both types of treatment for our patients. And then once a patient starts a treatment, I want to follow up that patient with about a month just to reassess where they were before till after. And then I'll see them once again after that therapy. And so those are the treatments for stage one. In my experience, once again, mainly I'm doing amniotic membranes as well as the human nerve growth factor.
Thank you for joining me today to answer these questions about stage one neurotrophic keratitis and how optometrists can provide improved management for patients with this condition.